My name's Butch, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank Teresa for forgetting my name so quickly. Alcoholics aren't very good at making decisions, you know, and I was trying to decide whether to go to the washroom or not before coming up here, and I think I made the wrong decision. So this could be a real short meeting tonight. I want to thank the committee and Bernie for the opportunity and privilege of being here tonight and this weekend. I consider it an honor and a privilege to come here. I consider it an honor and a privilege to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't say that because I'm at an AA meeting and it sounds nice. I don't say it because I'm up here and I want you to like me. I say it because I mean it from the very bottom of my heart. I consider it a privilege to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can't at times help feel that a guy like me never deserved anything like this. So I want to thank this committee for the privilege. Teresa's made this a lot easier for me. I want to thank her. Just a dear lady, and you're in for a real treat tomorrow night. Bernie, this committee's just been incredible. You know, just incredible, the warmth and the welcome that myself and my sponsor and Deb got here today. I don't know if you people here know this, maybe you do, but I'm going to tell you, I've had the good fortune to go to a lot of AA meetings in a lot of places, and it sure is no secret that the finest AA in Alcoholics Anonymous is in Western Canada. And Teresa and I, we were talking before this deal started tonight, and there is a warmth in this room. There is a power in this room that is indescribably wonderful. And the gentleman, and a fine job he was doing here tonight, and his final song, What a Wonderful World. Huh? All because Alcoholics Anonymous. I hear people talk about getting nervous coming up here, and some people get extremely nervous and stuff, and I just want to tell you, I feel like puking. I just... goes way beyond nervous for me, let me tell you that. I just want to let you people in the front row know you're fairly safe. I feel like it. I don't generally do it anymore. But I'm deeply touched to be here. You know, I was thinking the other day, I was just on a holiday. Deb and I were in the Caribbean, and we were sitting out on the balcony one night overlooking the ocean and stuff, and I started to cry. And she said, you know, what is it? I said, you know, I remember not that long ago I was in called the Beaches in Toronto. It's down by the water in Toronto, and I was down there, and I was living on the streets by now, and I had nowhere to go and nobody to go to. I had used up everybody who had ever been in contact with me, and they were a long way away from me, and I had absolutely nothing. I was down there. It was a hot afternoon. And I saw this little kid with a popsicle. And I thought to myself, do I ever wish I could have a popsicle? And I'm going to tell you something, I was fresh out of hope. And I truly believed from the bottom of my heart that it wasn't going to get any better than that for me. Huh? And I was sitting out here with Teresa before this meeting, and I felt my eyes filling up with tears, and I thought, man, oh man. You know, I came to you in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you said if you would just come here and do some things that I'm supposed to do, that I would live a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I sure never, ever dreamed this was possible. And I want to thank you people from the bottom of my heart. I'm awfully lucky, you know, there's always a couple of people I want to thank. And first is my group. My group's a Tuesday night Collier Street group in Barrie. And if you ever got a free hour with nothing to do on Tuesday night, we'd love to see you there. And then my sponsor, Bobby, who has had such a deep and profound effect in my life, and God willing, on July 17th, he'll have been here working this thing for 43 years. Yeah. Man, oh man. And he knows how nervous I get before doing this, because he does an awful lot of this stuff, and people, they don't realize it because he's just all over the place and think he doesn't, but I know, you know, and he just gets absolutely terrified and stuff about doing this, so he knows how I feel. And if you ever see us at home, and if we're going to some deal and I gotta get up in front, he sits beside me and he rubs my back. Yeah. And he says to me, "I know it doesn't feel like it, kid, but I'm with you every step of the way." And I get up to the front of one of these rooms and look out, and there he is, sound asleep in his chair. And just to show you the kind of sponsor I got, I said to him one time, "Honest to God, I just think sometimes my heart's going to give out." Some people don't. Some people can do this stuff with an ease and comfort and stuff, and boy, I just envy them. But, you know, I said to him, "Bob," I said, I just don't know, you know. I think one of these times I might just have a heart attack and die there." And he looked at me with that kind and gentle face of his and said, "Well, Butch, sort of a fitting place for an AA guy to go." Anyway, I was in a meeting a little while ago, and there was a fellow there, and he was talking, and it was a discussion meeting, and there was a big book there, and he said if he applied the principles in this book to his life, he never had to go to another AA meeting as long as he lived. Well, that's maybe so, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, I thought about what he said as a through the meeting and stuff, and I thought to myself, and I thought what meetings mean to me in my life, and why I need to be at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to tell you that I've, just to come here and be with you people and to have met some of the people, Billy and Jerry, and I've just got to meet, get to know, I mean, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and heard people like that, I mean, man, I just was in awe, and still am. Men and women who've come here and given a lifetime to Alcoholics Anonymous, commitments and sacrifices so that this thing would be here for me. If I didn't come to meetings, I'd have missed meeting people like this. And I've known people and watched people whose lives were just absolutely close to being finished, and I watched them get well, and families come together, and children's lives change. I'd missed all that if I didn't come to meetings. I've watched some absolutely things in Alcoholics Anonymous just make me cry with an emotion of love and kindness, and I'd miss all that if I didn't come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's other reasons that I have to go as well, you know. And I don't know about you, but, you know, well, I was out at an AA thing out in Cesar's area in Prince Albert a few years ago. Bob and I were there, and there was a couple of longtime AA members, Bob Bazance and Mildred Franks from Toronto. Good, good AA people, you know, and longtime AA members. And they were talking that weekend, and I was listening. And in both of them, in their talks, talked about being sober a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and how everything just fell apart for them emotionally. Just an absolute, you know, mess. And the great guy sat back in his chair. Thought to myself, too bad they didn't come and talk to me. Huh? Probably skimped on the fourth step somewhere. Well, if there's anybody here tonight who's like I was, or Aunt MB, and you're sober for a little while, or 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever years, and you've been working at these 12 steps, and things are going better in your life, and you really have it all together, I have two words of advice from my own experience. Buckle up. I have come to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous that it doesn't matter how long, and if we're lucky enough to be by the grace of God to stay here and stay sober, at times in our life we're going to go through some severe emotional turmoil. People are going to die. Relationships are going to end. Businesses are going to fail. You know? And there's times, you know, where I can let go. And, you know, when I break my shoelace, I can turn it over real well. Huh? Or when the battery goes dead in my car, I can let go and let God. Right? But I'm talking about when life happens. You know, when your heart feels like it's breaking in two? When you have that knot in your stomach, feel you can't go on another day and you feel like you're going to die? And it's my belief that an in-depth version of the seventh step isn't going to mean a damn thing to you. That's when the men and women in Alcoholics Anonymous will pick you up and carry you through. You want to believe I need meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need them real bad. I like to drink. Keep them coming, Teresa. I hear people in AA, they like this, they didn't like that, they like this part. I just like drinking. I liked everything about drinking. I liked drinking when I wasn't even drinking. I liked what I associated with drinking. I associated good times and parties and fun. I just loved to drink. Loved everything about it. I'm a barroom drinker. I don't identify with closet drinkers. Don't mean they're not alcoholics. Just drink differently than me. I like neon. I like neon. I've always liked neon, and I still do. I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I never would have made it. I'd have never made it, Jerry. I just love those little, I call them juke joints. You know those little corner bars, those little corner with the neon sign out there says cocktails. Oh, man. Huh? I was going to an AA thing a few years ago, Deb and I, and I'm driving in Pennsylvania somewhere, a little wee town I'm going through, and all of a sudden I hammered on the brakes of my car, and I'm backing up. She says, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I've got to see this again. And I back up, and here's this little juke joint bar in the corner with a neon sign. It says, stop for one, stay till one. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. I just like to drink. You know, I don't know. I hear an awful lot in Alcoholics Anonymous about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I don't know, but let me tell you something. It wasn't the Cleaver residence around my house. There was a lot of parties. There was a lot of drinking. And as a little boy, I could play bartender and take them drinks and take away the empties and stuff. And I could have swigs and they'd say, oh, isn't he cute? And I love that. I've always needed the attention, you know. I actively sought out alcohol for the first time. I was maybe 12 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store and get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur. A couple bottles of Old Sailor. I'm going to tell you, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. And we drank the wine and got drunk and threw up and passed out, and that was the end of my social drinking. It was all downhill after that. I also want to tell you, I stuck a needle in my arm for the first time at the age of 13 and did so off and on over the next 21 years. And I'd ask you to please keep an open mind. I treat my alcoholism and drug addiction as one. I belong to one 12-step fellowship, and I don't talk about drugs at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no need to. But I do mention when I'm in a meeting such as this, in case there's anybody's in the room who's like I was when I was new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard some pretty heavy-fisted stuff. And I wasn't sure if it was okay for me to be here or not. I was at a meeting, I was about 3 months sober. They had a one-day roundup, and I went, and they had an old-timers panel. My sponsor was speaking on it, I didn't know him then, and another fellow, Tommy Hills, who was our trustee at the time. And he was introduced as our trustee to New York. Now, you and I know there's no big shots in Alcoholics Anonymous, but let me tell you something. When you're sober 3 months, and this guy's introduced as the trustee to New York, in your mind, he's a big shot. And he told his story that day, and in his story he talked about having a daughter who came to Alcoholics Anonymous when she was 24 years old and didn't know if it was okay for her to be here or not. And they found her dead of an overdose of dope and booze. And Tommy said that morning, he said, if you think you might have a problem with drinking, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I turned to the guys I was with, I said, did you hear what he said? It's okay for us to be here. And I will be forever grateful to Tommy for that. And if there's anybody in this room tonight and you're not sure where you belong and you think you might have a problem with alcohol, I say to you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Stay here with us until you can decide where you can best be helped. And until then, let us try and help you. It only seems fitting that I would extend the same courtesy that was extended to me. So I like, as I said, I like the drinking. I like everything about the drinking. I'm not going to talk a lot about my drinking tonight. Other than to tell you a little bit about what drinking did to and for me. I'm the type of alcoholic, we talk in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot about resentments. I'm sure at meetings you have here, tonight we're going to discuss resentments. I prefer to call it hate, myself. Hate. Oh. I'm the type of alcoholic, I'm stopped at a red light and the light turns green and the guy behind me lays on his horn. I almost go right through the roof of my car. I swear to God I could get out, go back there, drag him out, and take a tire iron and crush his skull wide open. Now, I know you people in Winnipeg aren't that sick, but back in Ontario, I'm off. Hate. Huh? Sit at the kitchen table, pick up a plate of food, and just smash it against the wall. See some guy walking down the street, I hate his guts. Didn't like the hat he was wearing. Huh? Hate. My sponsor calls it soul sickness, gangrene of the spirit. Huh? Hate. Come out at different times for different, we're just angry. Usually with those that are closest to me and love me, because when you're a people pleaser like I was my whole life, you don't do that out there, you do it at home where people can't see it. Huh? Hate. Fear. Every decision I ever made in my life was based on unfounded and ungrounded fears. Where I went, what I did. You gonna try out for that team? What's nah, I don't feel like it. I was afraid to. Gonna go over there? Nah, I don't feel like going over there. I was afraid to. Everything I ever done was based on fear, without ever knowing it. Lonely. I'm 25 years old, I'm standing at a subway platform on a Friday evening, I'm all jacked up. Train pulls up and the doors open and a young couple my age get off the train, holding hands, and walked off into the night laughing and smiling. And I felt an emptiness and a loneliness like I couldn't describe. You know what I thought to myself? Why can't I be like those people? Why can't I just be like other people? Why is all the stuff got to keep happening? Why is all the trouble got to keep happening? Lonely, frightened, angry. Always that feeling of restless, irritable, and discontent. Drinking at this bar? Drink him up, Jerry. We're going to the other one. Huh? Drinking at this bar? Come on, let's have the other one. If I had this job, I wanted that job. If I had my wife, I wanted yours. Just didn't seem to matter. Always a feeling of restless. You're always that frightened and lonely and all that stuff. You know? And you know what happens when I have a drink? Oh, man. Huh? Just a little. I did that last week. Two guys got up and left the meeting. Remembering the feeling. Honest to God, I heard the speaker, and I heard Johnny Harris do that the first time I ever heard that. I never identified with anything more in my whole life. That's why I drink. I drink for that. Whew, man. Huh? All the fear went away. The anxiety left. The loneliness left. All that crap went away, and I felt all right. I drink for a sense of ease and comfort. I drink for the effect. Because when I'm not drinking, when I'm not putting something inside of me, I don't feel quite right. I'm either frightened, I'm upset, I should be here, I should be there, but I'm never just quite right. And that's why I drink alcohol. But you see, I'm an alcoholic. When I'd start drinking, I'd drink 60 ounces of vodka, I'd smash my car up. And I'd go out drinking after work with the boys for a couple of drinks, I'd go on a 3-week bender, I'd lose my job. And I tell my wife I'm going outside for a pack of smokes and a loaf of bread, and I'd run into Bernie, we'd stop for a couple of drinks, and I'd be gone for 18 days. Because I'd lose my wife. And near the end, I'm drinking, I don't want to stop drinking, I don't have any more money, so I go and steal it. So now I'm going to jail. You know what we focused on in my life? We focused on the crazy mayhem going on. We focused on the car crashes and the broken marriages and the lost jobs, and that's what we looked at. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people say to me, Butch, you know, if you just quit drinking, things would be okay. And there were times I wasn't drinking, and guess what? They were a long way from okay. They were worse. Huh? But that's why I drank. And I'd love to stand up here tonight and tell you that I woke up one morning, HSC wanted to lend me some more money, my wife was sending me flowers, work was thinking of promoting me, and I thought to myself, I think I'll join AA today. Huh? Every now and then I hear some moron from the front of one of these rooms say, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And I'd like to get the tire iron back out. I've never heard anything so nuts in my whole life. The right reasons? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. I was in a lot of trouble. My back was up against the wall one more time. My boss had called me into his office on Tuesday. He said to me, Butch, he said, you're a real good employee. You're just not here much. He had a good point. He said, do you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, oh, no. No, no, no. I said, I know what the problem is, though. He said, well, maybe you'd share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, oh, yeah. I said, now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. So I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better, and everything's going to be all right. He said, you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, oh, no. No, no, no. I'm just going to quit. I was to learn later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for a number of years. Can you imagine, as I left his office, the chuckle he had? Oh, he's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another town in another hotel room drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And I knew, for some reason, I knew the jig was up this time. Alcoholics are liars, aren't we? I sit here lying and tell the truth. I don't know what that's about. I don't know where it comes from. Lies just fall out of my mouth. I'd be gone from work for a week. My wife would say, Butch, what are you going to tell them? I'd say, I don't know. Wait till they ask. I didn't have to think about it. Just come out. Huh? Just come out. I'd use them all up. I'd be gone. I'd call them on work. I'd say, listen. And I just couldn't phone up work and say, I'm sick. I won't be there. What is with that? We got to have a story. We've got to have a story for them. I'd I said, listen, I'm on my way to work. There's been a terrible car accident. The man in the car, his head's been cut off. And they need me to take it to the hospital. I don't think I can make it in. I can see them there Monday morning on the phone going, it's him again. You're not going to believe this one. So I used them all up. You know, I knew the jig was up. So I thought to myself, I had a couple tequilas, gave it my utmost attention. I thought, I know what I'll tell them. I'm an alcoholic and I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to tell you that I've been blessed since coming here. I hear people come and they didn't like the meetings. They don't like this. I always like come. I like the meetings. I always like the meetings. From my very first time here, I hear people say they were thinking this and thinking that. I think I was here 3 months before I even knew I was here. I was just here, you know. Because when I look back on it, I should have never really... I just picture myself there at a meeting, holding hands, saying the Lord's Prayer at varying speeds. But I don't even remember thinking about that. I was just here. I just liked coming here. Always liked the meetings. The other side of that coin is I thought you people were nuts. Why wouldn't I? I don't... You think back to your first meetings. I come in here and sit in a chair, some guy walk up here, say, my name is Bill, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I thought you were a dink. Grateful recovering alcoholic? Here's a doozy. I heard a guy stand up here, he says, I wouldn't trade my best day drinking for my worst day in AA. And I thought, am I glad I didn't drink with you? And I came, and I hear people in AA say they had a blackout. I had blackouts lasted 6 months. I go into a bar in May, come out in September. Just get a room. Why waste the traveling time, was my thinking. I came to you on September the 21st. I've been on a six-month bender. I'm sicker than I've ever been in my life. I'm dying. I'm shaking away about 120 pounds. And some guy looks at me with a goofy grin on his face. Looks like he's been eating Valium. Right? Get a load of this. Looks at me and says, easy, does it? Yeah, right. But I stayed. I stayed. And I've been absolutely blessed since coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. By the men and women who came into my life, the old-timers, and that's not said you want to believe with any disrespect, who came into my life, who cared enough about their own sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous to take time out of their lives to help a guy like me. Help me to understand that I had a disease. I never knew that. I didn't know that. I don't know about you. I always thought I drank the way I drank because I like to drink. People say, Butch, why do you drink 60 ounces of vodka? Because I like vodka. Why do you drink for 5 days straight? Because I like drinking. I hear people in AA, I was drinking to kill the pain. I didn't know that. I just drank because I thought I liked to drink. I've had to ask myself a question since then. I don't know about you, but I remember many, many times going into a bar and the waitress coming up and saying, hey, would you like another drink? I'd say, drop me a double vodka and bring me the bill. I wanted to drink that vodka, pay my bill, get in my car and go home. I wanted to drink that drink, pay my bill, get in my car and go home as much as I want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. That's what I wanted to do. And 5 days later, I'm sitting in some booze can still drinking saying, what happened? I knew nothing about the phenomenon of craving. I didn't know that I'm different than other people, and when I put alcohol in my system, something happens and I have no say-so when I'm going to stop. I never knew that. I knew nothing about an obsession of the mind. I could never understand how I'd sit at a kitchen table with the wife and the tears coming down my face saying, please don't leave me, I love you. I'm not even going to tell you I quit drinking because it's just over. Not even going to say I quit, it's just done, that's it. Finished. That was Monday, Wednesday, I'm in a bar drunk somewhere, gone again. Didn't know that at certain times I'm absolutely defenseless over that first drink. Then when everything else says I shouldn't drink, something says to me, Butch, just have one, it'll be all right this time, kid. And I'd have a drink, phenomenon, craving would start, I'd be off to the races again. I never knew that. He told me that lack of power was my dilemma, that I was powerless. And he told me that I had to admit to that. It was the only thing that I had to do 100%. The rest of the deal, I just practice and do my best at. But you told me that, I had to do 100%. I had to let go absolutely and admit to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic and my life is unmanageable. You know? And I came here for a while, and thank God I didn't come on Monday and have to believe on Tuesday. I really came to believe. I kept coming here and I saw you people and I watched you people. And the only thing I knew for sure, but this seemed to be something here that I'd never experienced in my life before. It seemed that you had some way of dealing, some way of living that I sure knew nothing about. And I came to believe that maybe, just maybe, this could work for a guy like me. And that belief has grown. And when I came to believe in that, I made a decision at that time. And that decision was I was willing to do anything you people told me I had to do. If you had told me I had to walk to Winnipeg, I would have said, you want me to walk home too? Huh? I just wanted to be here. There was something here, there was a safety or something I'd never had in my life. And I made a decision I was willing to do anything. And that was the beginning for me. And you told me that's all it took. And that belief and decision and it has grown and changed over time. That was the beginning of it for me. And you told me if I was ever going to stay here, I had to get down to work. I had to get down to the causes and effects. You were the first people. Everybody told me my whole life drinking was my problem. My whole life. People would say, Butch, if you just quit drinking and do what you do, you know, you'd be all right. You'd be just fine. You were the first people that ever told me that drinking wasn't my problem. Drinking was my solution. It was but a symptom. He told me that I had to get down and have a real look at what the causes in that were. If I ever was going to have any chance of getting well, I had to find out what was really wrong with me. I didn't know about any of that stuff. I didn't know. I had no idea. I knew, you know, when I took that inventory, I mean, I didn't write out an inventory and say, geez, Butch, you haven't been a very nice boy. I knew I was a lying, cheating, a thief. That wasn't a discovery for me. I never knew I'd spent my entire life trying to make you like me. You know, I had no self-esteem. The only self-worth I ever had in my entire life is if I could get you to tell me I was okay. That's why I was the guy in the bar always buying the drinks. That's why I had to have the people around me all the time. I couldn't stand for the party to end. I'd consistently have you telling me I was okay. I never knew that. I had no idea. Didn't know. Didn't know how full of hate and rage and anger I was. When you're a people pleaser like me and you need everybody to like me, you don't walk around mad all the time. You walk around smiling and laughing and having a good time. I didn't know how full of hate I was. I had no idea. I knew none of that stuff. You know? And that was the stuff that I had that had to come up and had to come out and stuff because I could never see it. And that's why when I finished that, I had to do that next step with somebody who understood what I was trying to do. Because you see, I can't see it on my own. We talk an awful lot in Alcoholics Anonymous about denial, disease of denial, all this denial. Denial is not my problem. It doesn't talks about delusion. Denial, I used to get caught with my hand right in the cookie jar, right in there. My mom would say, Butch, I told you not to take that cookie. I'd say, I didn't. She said, I just saw your hand in the cookie jar. I said, no, you didn't. Not me. Deny. I knew my hand was in the cookie jar. Huh? Delusion. That was my problem. Delusion. If you'd have seen me a week before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, by now, I mean, I am finished. I am used up. I am gone. There was times in my life in the city of Toronto, I was living in stairwells. I had a different address every night of the week. And we hear in AA about people, you hear that matching AA luggage, the green garbage bags? I didn't have any green garbage bags. I had what was on my back. I always managed to have an ultra suede jacket, though. Wanted to be cool at any expense. Huh? And this is the truth. If you've seen me walking down the street and said to me, Butch, how you doing? I looked at you and said, pretty good. Experiencing a little bad luck at the moment. Having some cash flow difficulties. But other than that, pretty good. Do you want to know the sad part about that? I believed it. I really believed it. I really believed things weren't that bad. Delusion. I can't tell the truth from the false. That was my problem. And that's why I had to take that step with someone who understood what I was trying to do. So they can help me to see these things, because I sure never know them, you know? And they continue to help me to see these things, because it just seems the longer I'm here, the more stuff that I see that I really and truly want to change about myself. You know, those defects of mine were so deeply buried and stuff, and it's taken such a long time and continues to. Because I believe, and my friend Cease from out here says either we're growing or we're going, you know? No, just staying still here for me. I don't know about you, but I have to keep going this way or I start going back the other way. And you told me the next step was a step that separates the men from the boys, or the men from the boys, or whatever it said. And that wasn't meant in any sexist sort of way, but I knew it was important. And you told me it was about change. That I had to change all my old ideas and all my old ways if I was ever going to have any chance of finding any happiness and peace and contentment. And I was willing to do that. I was ready to do that. And once again, you told me that I was powerless, that I had to ask for help. You know, I don't know about you, but I never ever woke up in the morning and thought, I wonder whose life I can destroy today. I never wanted my mom and dad sitting in a prison visiting room with their 17-year-old kid and the tears coming down their face saying, we're not going to have Christmas this year, Butch. We're waiting till you get out of here. I never wanted to do that to my mom and dad. I never wanted to have a wife sitting at home with no food to eat while I sat out in the bar playing Big Shot. I didn't want to do that. I didn't have the power to be the person I would like to have been. And you told me that I had to ask for help to change and to be rid of these things. And then you told me I had to start to make a list and I had to start to make restitution. And, you know, if a big part of my problem is low self-esteem and self-worth and all this stuff, does it not make sense that if I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and truly surrender, come to believe in something, start to take some actions in my life, really find out what's wrong, become willing to change it and ask for help, start to make restitution, do I not have to start feeling better about myself? It makes common sense to me. I just have to start feeling better about myself. I believe that recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous and our 12 steps are a process. I believe they're a character-building process. Okay? The same way that I believe relapse is a process. You ever hear this, oh, he just had a slip? What a pile of crap that is. He just had a slip. You show me an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous who belongs to a group, who's trying to apply these 12 steps to his life, who's out there working with other drunks and trying to live this thing, just popped in for a rum and coke? I don't think so. I think we slip long before we slip. I think we start to let up and I start that stop going to meetings and all that stuff, and that process starts till eventually I can't stand it and I drink. And you told me that I had to continue to take inventory. And you know, the longer I'm sober, I realize the easier it is for me to become critical and judgmental. Now, I know out west they're not like that, but back in Ontario, the longer I'm here, the easier it is for me to become critical and judgmental. Don't look at how they're doing it over there. Look what that guy's doing. Huh? You ever judge people who judge people? Oh, that's a fun game. Sit on this spiritual hilltop and judge the judges. Yeah. I've been in meetings where people discuss for 45 minutes whether they're recovered or recovering. Smoke comes out my ears. I've never heard anything so nuts in my whole life. Who cares? Huh? Who cares? But I'm going to tell you what you showed me in that step. It says there that it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and to rest on our laurels. And if we do, we're headed for trouble. Because I'm not cured of alcoholism. Not cured. What I have is a daily reprieve that's contingent upon my spiritual condition. And that spiritual condition is maintained here with you and Alcoholics Anonymous and doing the things I need to do. Easy for me to let up on the spiritual program of action. Oh, man. You know, I've been making coffee for 10 years now. Let the other guy do it. Huh? I've been dragging those drunks out of the detox for a while. Let somebody else do it. It is easy. And you want to know, in my experience, the insidiousness of this disease, because the longer I'm here, I see how powerful it is it's so slow. And it happens so subtly. And the real danger for me is I don't ever see it. I never even see it. And before I know it, it's you, and it's you, and it's this, and the fear slowly comes back, and the resentment slowly come back, and that feeling of restless, irritable, and discontent. And if you think restless, irritable, and discontent is bad when you're drinking, try it sober. And eventually, I will become so unhappy, and the pain will become so great, I'll drink again. He told me it has to happen. It is the nature of the disease. So I have to continue to look and continue to grow and to keep an open mind and all that. And he told me that I had to continue to grow spiritually. And what is a spiritual person? And I'm going to tell you that I do not believe that there is anybody any more spiritual walking the face of this earth than the men and women that I'm looking at tonight. I do not believe it gets any more spiritual than a person trying their very best to be a little better and a decent sort of a human being. Huh? Some days I fall way short. I really do. But I'm going to tell you something. There isn't a day goes by that I'll try my very best to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to try and do what I believe God would have me do. And you told me if I want to keep it, I got to give it away. The great paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said to me, nothing ensures us immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. Huh? And I hear people say, oh, he'll come and get it when he's ready. Isn't that a nice little ease out? It really takes me off the hook. I'm sure glad Bill didn't feel that way about Bob. We have a whole new deal tonight. He had told me that the occasional deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others. Got to give it away if you want to keep it. Absolutely incredible. What time are we finishing here? 9 o'clock? Not now, eh? I just want to take, I'm not going to talk long tonight. I want to just take a couple minutes, if I could, and talk about something that we talk about in many meetings that I go to at home, and I presume out here we hear often. Tonight we're going to discuss gratitude. Tonight we're going to talk about gratitude. And the men and women in my life told me, what's that gratitude is an action, not a thought. Don't tell me how grateful you are, show me. And I'm going to tell you that I'm extremely grateful tonight just to be grateful. Because before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was never grateful a single solitary day in my life. No matter what I had, it was never enough. If I had a car, I wanted a newer car, a house, a bigger house, a job, a different... Didn't matter what I had in my life, I always wanted more or different. Never, ever knew the meaning of gratitude. And you know, a number of years ago, my sponsor and I, we were at Akron, Ohio, at 855 Ardmore at Dr. Bob's house, and we went there to that house, and there was no people there, and a fellow from Cleveland took us there, and we got to the front door, and I started to cry. And he said, you take your time, Butch, this happens to a lot of people who come here. And we went into that house, and we spent time in that house, and my sponsor and I, we sat at the kitchen table where Bill and Bob sat, and the tears poured down our faces. With a sense of gratitude beyond anything I've ever known. And I had the privilege this past summer of being in Minneapolis at our international convention. And when they have their deal there, the members registering, they ask anyone over 40 years to let themselves be known to the committee. And on a Saturday night, they have a meeting in the kingdom, and they have all the members over 40 years sit together down at the foot of the stage. And they draw 15 names out of a hat, and each have 3 minutes. Well, my sponsor's over 40 years sober and stuff, and he doesn't walk so well anymore, so they let me go with him. And on the Saturday night in Minneapolis, I sat down at that stage with 203 members of Alcoholics Anonymous over 40 years. And I looked over at my sponsor, and I saw the tears streaming down his face. Everything that I have is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that I am or everything I ever hope to be is because of you people. What words do you use to thank someone for your life? What words do you use? I don't have them. I don't know what they are. I only hope and pray in some small, small way my actions can reflect my gratitude to you and this beloved fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe you everything. Alcoholics Anonymous is my life, and everything else falls in around the perimeters. I owe you everything. I had some people say to me one time, you know, Butch, you talk about gratitude at those meetings quite a bit. Couldn't help but notice you had a new car out in the parking lot. Things seem to be going okay. How grateful would you be if they weren't? Real good question. One I've had to look at and to ask myself. You think I love Alcoholics Anonymous? Let me give you my mama's phone number. I'll show you someone loves AA. I put my mom and dad through absolute hell for many, many years. Their kid's name in the front page of the paper, their kid in and out of jail, didn't know where he was, didn't know if he was alive or dead. Pretty tough stuff. Well, I got sober and stuff, and My dad took early retirement after I got sober, and he tore his cottage down and he built a home on the lake he loved with all his heart. He just loved it there. And he's out playing golf every day with his buddies, having a few beers, and he and my ma are traveling all over the place. And his kid, Butch, is sober and Alcoholics Anonymous for a handful of years, and it looks like he's going to stick. Man, he ain't ever had it this good. Life's good. And we go over there on Sundays and stuff and have a barbecue, and it's a nice deal. If I couldn't go, I'd always call and stuff. And One Sunday I couldn't go, and I phoned over and I talked to my mom. I said, I won't be there. We'll see you next week. And I said, say hi to Dad. He's watching the Blue Jays on TV. And about 4:30 in the morning, my phone rang, and it was a neighbor. And she said, Butch, she said, something's happened. You better come up to the hospital. It's your dad. Doesn't look good. And I got in my car, and it was the middle of the night. It was a half-hour drive up to the hospital, and I drove up the highway. And as I was driving up the highway, I said to my friend upstairs, I say, you know, I sure would appreciate it if you just not take him now. Not now. Their life just got going so good. Please just give them a little time. And I drove up there, and I got to the hospital. It was late. There was no people around, and there was a lady at the front door, and she said, you must want to see Mrs. Maslin. I said, no. I said, I want to see my dad. She said, I'm very sorry. He's gone. He didn't make it. 56 years old. Just gone. It was like somebody unzipped me and took out my heart. I felt an emptiness and a loneliness and a hurt inside like I hadn't felt for a long, long time. And I spent some time in the room with my dad's body and went back to my mom's place, and it starts, huh? AA people start coming. And AA people start phoning. People were phoning me from cities I didn't even hardly know. Just wanted me to know AA was with me. And I was there all that day and into that night. And I went home that night. I had to get more clothes and stuff. And I got home, and I guess I didn't look so good. My wife said to me, come here and let me hold you for a minute. And I said, just a minute, there's something I have to do first. And I got down beside my dad, and I thanked God for another day of sobriety. You see, my friends, Alcoholics Anonymous works in the good times, and Alcoholics Anonymous works in the bad times. Alcoholics Anonymous works all the time. All the time. In those darkest hours, in those times when we think we can't go through, this program and the fellowship and the people in it, they'll pick you up and they'll carry you through. They really and truly will. If there's anybody here that's new tonight, I'd urge you to stay with us. Stay here. It says in our book, the bright spot in our lives will be with one another. To watch others get well and them in turn help others. To watch a fellowship grow up around us. To have a host of friends. We think this you'll not want to miss. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Stay here. I want to thank this committee and the hospitality and the honor and privilege, Bernie, of being here with you tonight. I'm looking so forward to this weekend now that this deal's over. I really am. I'm looking forward to Teresa and Jerry and Billy and Sean and, you know, I don't know what's going to happen from here on in, and none of us know for sure, do we? That's called life. You see, friends, just because we get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean life stops happening. As I said, people die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. Bad health comes along. Life still goes on. But I'm going to tell you something. Every single morning, for some time now, I say to my friend upstairs in the morning, I say, if you see fit, I sure would appreciate it if you would keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my dear, dear friends, there is absolutely no place in this whole world I'd rather be than right here with you fine, fine people. Thank you, and God bless you.